Welcome back. Thanks for joining me on another episode of Follow Me Into the Dark. Once again, I am your host, Michelle, and this week we are talking about Natalie Wood. We're going to talk about the mysterious death of a Hollywood star, this tragic ending that unfortunately it drew so much attention. Her death drew so much attention that it really overshadowed her life and her career. When you think of Natalie Wood, you automatically think about how she died and think about what exactly happened that night, that mysterious and questionable ending to her life. You know, someone who had such an extreme phobia of water and she drowned. So how? You know, the question is, almost 40 years later, that's what people are still wondering. What happened to Natalie Wood that night? And the terrible irony is, she said in an interview previous to that, quote, she said, "I've always been terrified, still am, of water, dark water, seawater." So let's talk about Natalie Wood here. Let's go back. As a child, her real-life household was the definition of dysfunction. Her father was a serious drinker, and her mother was super controlling stage mom. She was taught at a young age to just keep quiet and do what she's told and don't rock the boat. There's definitely some psychological abuse going on there, some paranoia and phobias that were instilled in her at a young age by her mother. And she was said to have a bedroom full of storybook dolls that she believed were alive, and she spoke to them and they spoke to her. At the age of 15, she had a quote unquote serious friendship with Frank Sinatra. And at 16, she began a sexual relationship with a 43-year-old Nicholas Ray, who was the director of Rebel Without a Cause. But let's go back. Let's start at the beginning, okay? Natalie Wood was born Natalia Zakarenko in San Francisco on July 20th, 1938, to Russian immigrant parents. Her parents were, her dad was a day laborer and a carpenter, Nikolai Zakarenko, and her mother, Maria, was a housewife. Nikolai was the son of a chocolate factory worker. And I don't know about you, when I picture that in my head, what do you picture when you think of a chocolate factory worker? Are you picturing an Oompa Loompa? Because I am. So anyways, and then Maria, she was born to an industrialist. The maternal grandfather of Natalie, he owned soap and candle factories. So, and then her grandpa on the dad's side, the one that was the chocolate factory worker, the Oompa Loompa, he joined the anti-Bolshevik civilian forces early in the war. And in 1918, he was involved in a street fight between red and white Russian soldiers, and he was killed. So this convinced the Zakarenko family to move to Montreal, Quebec, where they also had family. And Nikolai later moved the family to San Francisco in search of work. So young Natalie came from a very complex family situation. While she was adored by her parents, they both had their problems. Her father, Nikolai, worked hard to provide for his family, but the struggles of trying to survive during and after the Great Depression, as well as anti-immigrant discrimination, the family actually changed their name, their last name, to Gurdon to sound less Russian. But that contributed to his alcoholism. And when he was sober, though, he was known to be the tender parent. But his bouts of drunkenness were violent and suspected to have stemmed from his experience of seeing his grandfather buried alive during the revolution. Eek. Yeah. That would mess with me, too. So anyways, Maria, Natalie Wood's mother, so she had unfulfilled ambitions of becoming an actress and a ballet dancer. So she wanted her daughters to pursue an acting career and live out her dreams. So, yes, she couldn't be what she wanted to be, so she pushed it on her children to live out her dreams of being an actress or a ballet dancer. So, you know, from a young age, Natalie Wood couldn't even aspire or dream to be, you know, a teacher, whatever. She was pushed into being famous, is what it comes down to. So, you know, Maria would even take young Natalie Wood with her to the cinema, and where she could study the films of Hollywood child stars. And the poor family, they couldn't even afford acting training for Wood, but she did put her in ballet classes when she was four. So the Zakarenko family eventually moved to Santa Rosa, where young Wood was noticed by members of a crew during a film shoot. So Wood made her film debut in the drama Happy Land in 1943, set in the home front of World War II. She was only 4 years old, and her scene as the little girl who drops ice cream cone lasted 15 seconds. But it somehow attracted the interest of film director Irving Pichel. So let me tell you a little more about Maria. She was the stage mom from hell, okay? Picture stage moms nowadays, you know, these crazy overbearing celebrity moms, you know, the Kris Jenners and you know, Britney's mom and Lindsay Lohan's mom and, you know, all these crazies. Take them, wrap them all into one, and Maria was still worse than them. She manipulated every aspect of her child's behavior and pushed everything else aside just to pursue Wood's success. She forced her to butter up and flatter these powerful people, and she threatened her with punishment if she forgot her lines. She told Natalie, after she orchestrated this introduction with Pichel, she said, "Make Mr. Pichel happy." So she's already putting it in Natalie's brain at a young age, make this man happy. Do whatever to make this man happy. So that's kind of twisted. And she was her mother's creation. Natalie Wood's sister said of their mother, "My mother was the guiding force in everything." And Maria, her mother, said at one time, "God made her, but I invented her." So, you know, she gives God credit for, you know, just putting her body on earth, but she made her who she was, is how I take that. So she got to audition for roles as an actress, and the family moved to Los Angeles to help seek out roles for her. RKO Radio Pictures executives William Goetz and David Lewis chose the stage name for her, Natalie Wood. And her first name, based on Natalia, you know, her child-given name, and her last name was in reference to a director, Sam Wood. So, and Natalie's younger sister changed her name as well to Lana Wood. She did go on to do some acting. I think the biggest thing that she was in was there was a James Bond film that she was in, and her character's name was Plenty O'Toole. Moving on, Wood had a few job offers over the years, but Pichel helped her get a screen test for a more substantial role in the film Tomorrow is Forever in 1946. So Wood passed an audition and won the role of Margaret Ludwig, a post-World War II German orphan. At the time, Wood was unable to cry on cue for a key scene. So her mother pulled her aside and told her to imagine their dog dying. And when that didn't work, her mother tore a butterfly to pieces, ripped a butterfly's wings off right in front of Natalie to give her reason to cry. And it worked. She started crying, and her mom like pulled her back onto set and said, "Okay, she's ready now. Here you go." So yeah, she's a twisted bitch. Like, yeah, I called her a bitch because that's really fucked up. That is so fucked up. So Wood started appearing regularly in films following this role, and soon received a contract with the film studio, 20th Century Fox. So back then, actors had to sign on a long-term contract with a studio. They couldn't work with other studios while they were under contract. They could be loaned out to other studios, but under contract, they couldn't refuse a part. And here's some other things that really that they had to follow. They had to be willing to change their names. Women often had to change their appearances, anywhere from dyeing their hair to plastic surgery. Appearances were everything, and they were expected to uphold it. And even their love lives were often arranged to drum up publicity for films. And even some marriages were arranged, especially forcing homosexual actors into heterosexual marriages for appearance sake. Jean Harlow was even told she couldn't get married because it would alter her sex appeal. There was rules against children as well. Sadly, that meant that some women were forced to get abortions because of it. So that's pretty fucked up. Some women got around that by adopting kids so that it wouldn't alter their body and their appearance. So basically, the studios owned them. Today, thankfully, actors can work with one and then move on to the next. They're not forced by those guidelines anymore. At least not that I know of, not that I hear. But her first major role was that of Susan Walker in the Christmas film Miracle on 34th Street in 1947, which was a huge hit. I'm sure you've heard of it. If you haven't heard of it, you must be living under a rock, because that was a huge movie. And after that, Macy's invited her to appear in the store's annual Thanksgiving Day parade. So following her early success, she received many more offers to play on films. She typically appeared on family films, having the privilege to work alongside such actors as Fred McMurray. He was in My Three Sons. He was in The Absent-Minded Professor. He was in The Shaggy Dog. The movie that they were together in was Father Was a Fullback. I've never heard of that. She worked with Margaret Sullivan in No Sad Song for Me. She worked with Jimmy Stewart, which I hope you know who that is. They were in a movie called The Jackpot. And then she worked with Joan Blondell in The Blue Veil. I didn't know who she was. I had to look her up. I'd never heard of Joan Blondell before. I didn't really recognize her movies, except she was in Grease, but she didn't have a major role. She was Vi. She was the waitress in that little diner. Remember the scene where Frenchie, like everybody leaves and Frenchie takes her scarf off her head and her hair's pink, and like the waitress is there and they go back and forth. That's her. And then she also starred with Betty Davis, and they were together in the movie The Star. So Betty Davis was probably best known for the movie Whatever Happened to Baby Jane. So Wood found herself in high demand, and she appeared in over 20 films as a child, just as a child alone, over 20 films. And the California law in that era required that until reaching adulthood, child actors had to spend at least 3 hours a day in the classroom. So Wood received her primary education on the studio lots. She got 3 hours of school lessons in whenever she was working on a film, and she was reported a straight-A student. And they were quite impressed with her intellect. After school hours ended, she would hurry to the set to film her scenes. So from a young age, Natalie Wood's mother, filled her with fear of dark water because a fortune teller prophesied a drowning. And she really transferred this and many other fears onto her children. So according to Lana, Natalie's sister, their mother was very superstitious, and she used to always tell them about a gypsy woman who told her that she was going to have two daughters. She saw fame, but there would also be loss through drowning. Natalie said, "I've been terrified of the water ever since I was 12, and yet it seems I'm forced to go into it on every movie that I make." When she was filming The Green Promise as a 10-year-old, Wood was terrified to play a scene in which she had to cross a bridge over raging water, a bridge that was rigged to collapse the moment she reached the other side safely. And the her mother assured her it was going to be perfectly safe, just do it. But when she got halfway across the bridge, it collapsed, and she was thrown into the water, barely clinging to part of the bridge, and the director yelled, "Keep the cameras rolling," while this terrified child with a broken left wrist struggled in the water. And while she was filming Splendor in the Grass in 1961, director Elia Kazan learned of Wood's phobia when she told him, regarding an important scene that takes place at a reservoir, she had a deep-seated terror of water, particularly dark water, and of being helpless in it. She asked him if they could film the scene in a small tank inside a studio. He told her no. He declined her request because he wanted to use her terror to enliven the scene. But he assured her that it would be safe in the reservoir because it was shallow enough for her feet to touch the bottom. And so she's professional. She does what she's supposed to. She does as she's instructed. But once the scene was shot, she leapt out of the water and she shivered at her fear before laughing hysterically. And then again, at age 14, because of a last-minute script change, she was given the choice of jumping off the back of a boat or losing her role. So she was given an ultimatum. You either jump off this boat or you're fired, basically. And that was in The Star with Bette Davis. She jumped and she was immediately hysterical. Ironically, this was off the coast of Catalina, by the way. So she was told to jump over the railing of this yacht and land in the water. And the director assured her that there would be men in rowboats to pick her up after the jump. And so she reluctantly did the scene, but she panicked and screamed and freaked out when she got in the water. So the scene was so devastating to watch, Bette Davis actually threatened to quit the production if they made her do it again. So they brought in a body double to do a reshoot. And when she hit the water, she actually got caught up in some kelp and almost drowned. And so after all of this, they ended up scrapping the scene anyway. They cut the scene from the movie. So, I mean, these directors are assholes. Are they still assholes like this nowadays? Like, these guys were total pricks to get what they wanted. You know, you hear about these directors doing things to get whatever they want. I don't know if they still do this today, but do you remember, I remember hearing about Tippi Hedren and the hell that she went through in The Birds with Alfred Hitchcock. He replaced the mechanical birds with real ones without her knowing it. And for days, she just had birds thrown at her, which would be my worst nightmare. I am so deathly just freaked out by birds. But these birds were just thrown at her for days. And then at one time, they even tied up loosely onto her clothing some birds that were just pecking at her, which, I don't know, that kind of sounds like some animal abuse there too. She, you know, freaked out and was like, okay, I'm done with this, basically. And she was recommended by a doctor to take a week off. And Alfred Hitchcock was like, no, we have to keep filming. And, you know, this doctor was like, hey, dude, you need to give her a break. I doubt he said dude. But, you know, hey, man, you got to give her a break. And he did. And she went back and she finished filming. And we have that movie, which I love that movie, but that's pretty messed up. But so what the hell is going on with these directors? Like, that's just cruel. Like, what the hell? I don't think that still goes on today. Maybe it does and we just don't hear about it. But yeah, that's messed up. But I guess the bottom line is they got their scene, right? As long as they get the scene they wanted, that's what matters. So anyway, Natalie Wood was so scared, had such a phobia of water, that at one time she was even scared to have her hair washed, and she had recurring nightmares about drowning. Moving on, now she's 15, and her lovely mother, Maria, set her up to be seduced by 38-year-old Frank Sinatra, One friend noted that they said, quote, her mother was a pimp. A couple years later, Maria looked the other way while her 16-year-old daughter was having an affair with a 43-year-old Nicholas Ray, and that probably helped her land the role in Rebel Without a Cause, which that movie launched her adult career. Now, her sister recently came out with a story about Natalie being raped when she was 16. She said that her and her mom had drove Natalie to Chateau Marmont Hotel in Los Angeles, and it was supposed to be some interview for a role, and this was after Rebel Without a Cause. And I guess she came out of the hotel. So this is per her sister. She came out of the hotel hysterical, claimed that she had been raped, and her mother pretty much told her to shut her mouth and keep it a secret. Now, that's one story you hear. There's another wording that says that Lana said she was sleeping in the car, Natalie came out, she overheard a conversation that Natalie and the mom was having, and later on alluded to the fact that she was raped. So I'm not sure what the exact story is coming from Lana. She seems a little back and forth. She did come out recently though, and she just kind of like flat out said, you know, she brought forth these allegations. And there is there's word of who it was. There's a few names that are thrown out there, the one more so than others. But I'm not going to say who that is because he is dead now, and I have no desire to trash somebody's name when he can't even defend himself. Who knows? Who knows if she was raped? If she was, then I'm very sorry, and I'm sorry that you were put in that situation where you had to hide it, and that I believe that her mother, you know, if that did happen, I totally believe that her mother would have told her to just keep her mouth shut, because that's the type of mother she had, sadly. But who knows if it happened, and if it did, allegedly was this one person, and I'm like I said, I'm not going to say who it is because who knows. And I'm not defending him. I'm not defending that action by any means. You know, they said that because she had a consensual affair with that director of Rebel Without a Cause, that many actors and directors just assumed that she was willing to sleep with anyone. So first of all, using the word consensual when she's 16 and he's 43, no, I don't think the word consensual should be used there. That's messed up on any level. No 43-year-old should be taking advantage of a 16-year-old. That's not consensual. That's not okay in any form or any situation. So don't call it consensual, manipulated, not consensual. And I don't care if she was having a consensual relationship with whoever at whatever time of her life, that still gives you no right to lay hands on her for any reason. So who knows what actually happened there. But moving on, that is just something that her sister did come out and say. But again, I've watched many interviews with her sister, and I kind of get a weird kind of wishy-washy vibe from her. That's just me. I don't know. I don't know. Anyways, moving on. So for Wood, who was 16, she'd been in 20 films since she was 5. Getting the part of Judy in Rebel Without a Cause would be her chance to transition to an adult role. The problem was that there was actresses, you know, from Debbie Reynolds all the way to Jane Mansfield that were being considered for this role. But between the time that she interviewed with the director, Nicholas Ray, and did the screen test, they actually became lovers. Lovers, quote unquote lovers. But that still didn't clinch the part for her yet. So according to Wood, in an interview that she did in 1974, on a drunken night out with Dennis Hopper, she was in a car crash, And Ray came to the hospital, the director, Ray came to the hospital, and the doctors had called Wood a goddamn juvenile delinquent. So she yelled, "Did you hear what he called me, Nick? He called me a goddamn juvenile delinquent. Now do I get the part?" Whether this worked or not, Ray did write a memo to Warner Brothers that read, "We just spent 3 days testing 32 kids. There is only one girl who has shown the capability to play Judy, and that is Natalie Wood." So at the age of 16, she began filming Rebel Without a Cause. She co-starred with James Dean and Sal Mineo, 1955 groundbreaking depiction of teenage rebellion and angst. So Natalie Wood played the girlfriend of the troubled outsider, who was played by James Dean. She did get an Academy Award nomination for her work in this movie. So, again, as an actress under contract, they sometimes had to do movies that they didn't want to do. So, and then of course, along with her mother pressuring her all the time. So one of her least favorite projects was that of a movie called The Searchers. And that was in 1956. It was a Western with John Wayne. She felt that she'd totally been miscast for this because she was her character was a white girl who was abducted and raised by Native Americans. So she didn't like that role. But again, studio owns you. You have to do parts that you may not like. So let's talk a bit about her social life. You know, she dated some big stars. Her relationship seemed pretty short-lived and kind of dysfunctional. She dated Dennis Hopper, that I mentioned before, Steve McQueen. She dated Hotel Dynasty heir Nicky Hilton, and she even dated Elvis Presley. In 1956, Life magazine named her the most beautiful teenager in the world. So in 1956, Natalie Woods and Robert Wagner went on their first date. It was initially arranged by the studio execs. She was 8 years his junior, yet she had more acting experience than him. So Robert Wagner, he was kind of the boy next door, working his way up. He had said, "You were part of 20th Century Fox. You felt proud of being part of the organization. When I wasn't working, I was on the road, going out and selling movies or dancing on the stage and meeting the public. They never let you rest." So here's a funny little side story that I found silly. So he did a movie called Prince Valiant. That was his character, Prince Valiant. And one day on the set, Dean Martin passed by him and first thought he was talking to Jane Wyman because of his wig. Like, I'm going to post a picture of this ridiculous wig that he had to wear in this movie. He looked so silly. And Dean Martin, of course, you know, part of the Rat Pack, cool guy, Dean Martin, mistaked him for Jane Wyman, who was an actress at the time. I don't know. What I remember her from was there was a show like in the 80s. I remember it was called Falcon Crest, I think. I think that's what it was. She was, you know, old already in that movie. She was also married to Ronald Reagan. But anyways, she kind of had this like page boy haircut and this wig he had to wear. It looked ridiculous. And it was sad because he's a good looking guy and he looks so silly. But I'll post the picture. Anyways, moving on. So even though they were set up on this date by the studio, the attraction was real. She admits that she had a crush on him as a child. She told a story in an interview that one day her and her mom, when she was 10 years old, they were walking on the studio and she saw Robert Wagner. She turned to her mom and said, "When I grow up, I wish I could marry him." So that's cute. I mean, that's cute. Kind of creepy. You know, at least he didn't say that about the 10-year-old. Anyways, RJ. So I say RJ because that is what Robert Wagner was called by his friends and family. It was a nickname that was picked up at a young age, and it stuck. It's from, his full name is Robert John Wagner. So, you know, he just seemed to be this kind of happy-go-lucky guy. He said the only thing he, without a care in the world, he said the only care in the world he had was his hair. So, you know, young, happy guy, trying to work his way up in the movie world. And on their 18th, on her 18th birthday was their first date, and he took her to a movie that him and Spencer Tracy was in. And it was, they just kind of hit it off at the beginning. It was just a love match set in the history of old Hollywood. You know, a child star turned teen idol. She grew up on screen in front of millions of Americans and now is making her way as an adult actress. And Robert Wagner, 26 years old, good-looking guy, working for 20th Century Fox. He had his looks, he had charisma, you know, had his sights set on big screen stardom. They were just a power couple. They were the it couple. They were the Brad and Angelina. They really were. They were mobbed by crowds all the time wherever they went. He proposed to her at Romanoff's restaurant, and he did the cheesy little cliche thing where he put the ring in the champagne glass to propose to her. In 1957 in Scottsdale, Arizona, they were married. In 1960, they started a movie together. It was called All the Fine Young Cannibals. I don't think it was a big hit, from what I understand. Not a big hit. But just FYI, that's where the band, the Fine Young Cannibals, got their name. If you remember that band from the 80s, they sang that stupid song, Sorry If You Like It. And don't get me wrong, I love 80s music. I'm all about 80s music. I'm stuck in the 80s. But there was that song, She Drives Me Crazy, and he had like a really high-pitched voice. And I remember they sang live on one of the awards show once. He sounded horrible live. Yuck. But I wasn't impressed with him. But anyways, that's where they got their name. So now, Natalie's career was booming. She's taken off. She's busy. RJ's career is kind of leveling out. So her next big role was in a movie called Splendor in the Grass with Warren Beatty. And she was also cast in West Side Story immediately after Splendor in the Grass. And it actually overlapped a bit. West Side Story had to start filming. The cast started 4 weeks before her because she was still finishing Splendor in the Grass. And so she had to catch up. She said, I didn't have time to be what I wanted to be. So, which probably was, you know, a happy wife and, you know, in a happy marriage, but she didn't have time for it. Robert Redford said this of Natalie Wood. The business she was in, a tough business. So to survive in that business, you had to have a tough side. I think she had to develop that, but it wasn't comfortable. What she really wanted was to laugh and have fun and be a regular person. She had a big heart, and that showed up in her work. So she was not the first choice for Splendor in the Grass, so she really had to prove herself. So problems in the marriage kind of were coming in here. They were starting to pile up. And, you know, they had a lot of pressure to be the perfect couple. You know, all eyes were on them. And Wood had said, after 2 years of marriage, things began to change. We were aware we had problems, but we tried to avoid the real conflict. We maintained superficial happy relationship and hoped that pretending nothing was wrong, the problem would go away. How do you separate reality from illusion when you've been trapped in make-believe your whole life? I really like that last quote. Coming from, you know, she had a childhood of fame, you know, her whole life from 4 years old. She was in the business. She was famous from, you know, a young age. And so that's probably, that quote probably kind of hits the nail right on the head when you're talking about, a lot of these actors. How do you separate reality from illusion when you've been trapped in make-believe your whole life? I think that's good. So a friend and playwright, Mark Crowley, talked about meeting her and RJ the first time. He said he met them both the same day. He was working for the director, Elia Kazan, and he was the production assistant for Splendor in the Grass. He says, I had to get Natalie every morning, and we talked a lot, and it was clear to me that there was trouble in their marriage. So there was rumors that Natalie Wood and Warren Beatty, her co-star in Splendor in the Grass, were having an affair, and RJ was totally the jealous type. He was super jealous from what everybody says. So could have been something going on there. Now, that friend, Mark Crowley, he said, don't believe the rumors about Warren Beatty. He was not the reason for the divorce. They did separate in 61, and they divorced the following year. But who knows? I mean, he was a friend, and a friend is going to cover for you, right? Because afterwards, after they divorced, her and Warren Beatty actually dated for 2 years. But the relationship was not very serious. It was pretty casual, I guess. There was also a lot of rumor and speculation that the marriage ended because Natalie caught RJ with another man. Now, that's not been proven. There's nothing else that says along the lines that RJ was bisexual or gay. And it could very well have been because of the fact that his agent was Henry Wilson. And Henry Wilson was also the agent of some known gay actors, Rock Hudson, Tab Hunter. So some speculate that that rumor could very well just have come from the fact that who his agent was. Because we've never heard anything else. I mean, he's still alive today. And if he was gay, I mean, the way, you know, TMZ and all the craziness is today, if he was with a guy, I think we would have known it by now. And it's more acceptable nowadays. So just come out already if you are gay, right? But so none of that ever really came of anything. That's just, again, speculation. So who knows? She went through a string of relationships after she and Warren Beatty broke up. She dated Michael Caine, Frank Sinatra, Henry Jaglom, don't know who that is. Looked him up. He didn't seem to have, I don't know, anything that really jumped out at me. She was engaged to Arthur Lowe Jr., and she was also engaged to Ladislav Blatnik, who was the shoe king of Venezuela. But those both those engagements didn't last. It was also said that Natalie said at one time she was worried about dying alone. So that's kind of sad. So while working on location in Europe, RJ reconnected with an old friend, actress Marion Marshall. And after a two-year dating stint, RJ Marshall and her two sons from her previous marriage moved back to America, and they were married in July of 63. And they had one daughter named Katie. Now, when RJ had his first child with his wife, Natalie Wood actually said that she cried. She said she cried out of happiness, and also because that was something that they didn't share together. Now, RJ and Marshall actually separated in 1970, and they divorced in October of 71. It was also said that Wagner was engaged for a short amount of time to Tina Sinatra. That was Frank Sinatra's daughter, FYI. So, you know, at least he was dating a Sinatra that was in his age range, right? So he was also, so he's going through divorce and all of that. And at the same time, so he, you know, he was remarried, he had a kid. So Natalie eventually actually got married to a guy named Richard Grayson. And they had a big Russian ceremony in a Russian church. And they had a child together named Natasha. So Natalie put her work aside for a minute and was now all about this child. That's, you know, what her world revolved around now. And her husband even said he felt like she pushed him out. He was pushed aside for Natasha, the child. And then the husband eventually had an affair with her secretary. and Wood threw all his shit out the window. She changed the locks, and he said she had a pretty good temper. So anyways, RJ, his marriage was on the rocks, eventually divorced. She goes through a divorce. So soon after, they're both attending a party at John Foreman's house. He's a producer. And they saw each other again. And the sparks just flew. They felt drawn to each other again, and it just all kind of came flooding back. And all the feelings were still there. She said she knew she still had the feelings for him. She wasn't sure how he felt, but it all just kind of came rushing back. He asked her to give her a ride home, and she accepted. And after he dropped her off, they both admit to crying. She went inside and she cried, and he went down the street and he cried. And so they decided to give it a shot. They decided to reconnect, and they said, let's give normalcy a shot. So she had said about their first marriage, this is what she said about their first marriage. She said, when RJ and I were married the first time, we were like two children acting out a studio script. And now he'd become a man instead of a boy. And they chose the 1972 Academy Awards ceremony as their first public outing as a newly reformed couple. So they were remarried in Paradise Cove aboard the Ramblin' Rose. It was a small ceremony. This was 1972, and they honeymooned in Catalina. So when she got remarried, her sister Lana asked her, she said, why are you marrying him again? And Natalie said, sometimes the devil you know is better than the devil you don't. So whatever that means, take that how you want it. I don't know what she meant by that. You can speculate what she meant by that, but I don't know. Keep your friends close and your enemies closer. I don't know if that's what she meant at all. I could be totally off. Because honestly, they seemed happy. They had a child together named Courtney in 1974. And they all seemed very happy in their new blended family. She devoted herself to being a mom. RJ's career was starting to take off. He started to get more active. He landed a role in this show called Heart to Heart, which is probably his biggest thing. Well, up until, you know, the Austin Power movies where he was number two, if you remember that. But, you know, that's well past this point, past Natalie Wood. But he was in this show called Heart to Heart. It was a, you know, a success. It really took off. So his career's really taken off. She's happy as a mother. It said they would have these great New Year's Eve parties with famous people there. You know, the children said that it was just a happy environment. It was a house that was full of love and laughter and happiness. So everything seems storybook and blissful and wonderful right now. And that's where I'm actually going to pause it for today, guys, because the rest of this story, we're going to go into the dark side of this, the tragedy that happens, and we're going to talk about her death and what people think happened that night, the people that were involved that night, things that have come out since then, her autopsy report that was actually changed from one thing to another. I'll go over all of that in next week's episode. We're going to do a two-parter just to give this justice, to be able to talk about this thoroughly instead of rambling on into a two-hour-long session. Let's take a pause now, and we will continue this story next week, the mysterious death of Natalie Wood. So, again, guys, thank you for joining me. Thank you to my listeners all over the world. I see I've got a fan base going on over in Australia and Great Britain. Thanks, guys. Awesome. Shout out. And if you, like I said, I'm going to be posting some pictures. So follow me on Facebook. Follow me Into the Dark. Instagram is Follow Me Into the Dark, but with underscore in between each word. And then you can always contact me with any questions, any suggestions. I'm open to any input. You can contact me at followthedarkpodcast@gmail.com. Love to hear from you. Again, thank you for listening. And join me next week and we will finish this story, guys. So until then, stay dark, my friends.